So what's the name of this podcast?
Eugene
Cast.
How am I supposed to pronounce that?
Oig Cast.
A huge cast.
Huge cast.
You're listening to
Huge Cast.
That's right. You're listening to Huge Cast, a volunteer-powered cooperative where we talk with people who may or may not live in the Eugene, Oregon area. We think they have some really cool stories to tell. So grab a pen and paper and take notes, because there's a quiz after.
This is JoJo, and I'm talking with Dr. Dave Donaldson today. Dave is an anesthesiologist, and about a year ago, he started with Lane County Search and Rescue, the medical team for Search and Rescue, and Eugene Mountain Rescue. And that's what we're going to talk about today is the mountain rescue, because, wow! I was telling Dave earlier that I'm afraid of heights. So anything like going on a mountain on purpose and rappelling down anywhere is like a non-starter for me, but it's still really, really interesting. So before we jump into the search and rescue thing, how did you get started with mountain climbing? Or is it just called climbing for those in the know?
It's really just climbing. And climbing is just a generic term, and there's lots of different disciplines of climbing.
Like?
So there's mountain climbing, there's ice climbing, there's rock climbing, there's bouldering, where you're just climbing on boulders. Some people get pretty high up. There's free soloing, which
you've
seen the Alex Honnold film, Free Solo.
Yeah.
So there's a whole bunch of different disciplines encompassed in climbing.
Wow. And which one do you mostly do?
I like rock climbing the best.
And how is rock climbing different than like mountain climbing?
Rock climbing, pretty much you are just climbing on rock. It's like cliffs in Yosemite.
Oh.
It's in little cliffs at Smith Rock. It's, you know, climbing at the columns in Eugene here. You know, they're, you know, 50 feet high, just basalt columns. It's just climbing on rock itself. Mountain climbing usually encompasses you're on snow, ice, rock, a whole bunch of different things, going up a big mountain.
To get to the top.
To get to the top.
That's the entire point of mountain climbing, is to just get to the top.
And some mountains are just rock.
Like?
Like if you're climbing down in Patagonia, there's some big mountains down there that are
just
huge
rock
climbs. Same in Pakistan, same in other places. There are mountains that are basically just super big rock climbs.
Wow. Have you done some of those?
Yeah. Yeah, but not down in Patagonia or anything big. But I've climbed in Yosemite.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is Patagonia like on your list somewhere?
Not anymore, no.
Yeah.
No. It's a long ways away.
Yeah. Well, that's intense. I was telling you earlier, I'm afraid of heights. And so even when I watch movies about Everest or mountain climbing, it's very interesting, but it's terrifying to me how they can just hang on stuff. And the guys that put the little clamps in and then decide that they're going to just sleep on a ledge overnight, like, what?
Yeah,
that's insane.
Yeah,
I just can't even. So wow.
Well, that's because you're sane.
Yeah, okay, I'll go with that instead of just like a big chicken.
No, you're sane. I mean, that's, most people don't want to do that.
So why?
So well, I don't know. When I remember when I was I grew up in California. Well, I was born in Nebraska, but grew up in California from age 6 on. And my parents took me to Yosemite one time, and I was like 9 years old, and I saw some climbers up on the cliffs, you know, through binoculars. I could see them. And this was like 1963. And, you know, there were almost nobody climbed back then. They called that the golden age of climbing because everything that they went up was, they were sort of the first ones to go up that route. And I thought, wow, that looks cool. I want to do it. And my parents sort of said, oh yeah, you're never going to do that. You can't do that. Blah, 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 blah.
Right.
But then when I was 15, the Sierra Club was putting on a 9-week course that me and several friends took, and they covered just, was like one night a week, for a few hours, they would cover like map and compass 1 week. 1 week was snow travel. 1 week was glacier travel. 1 week was rock climbing. And they had all these different talks, and they had people there, and they showed gear. And 1 weekend, you went to this one area, and they threw a bunch of ropes off this rock, and you got to just tie in and climb up. And that's what I did, is I tied in and climbed up in my tennis shoes up a couple of climbs, and I was completely hooked.
Yeah. From it, what was you, how did you say you were, 9? No.
I started when I was 9, but I didn't really, I was interested from when I was 9.
Right.
But I didn't start climbing till I was 15 and a half or so.
Wow.
Yeah. I had to have my parents drive me.
Right. Well, yeah. Hey, Mom, I want to go climb a rock.
Yeah.
Can I get a ride, please?
Can I get a ride? Yeah.
Wow. So, I mean, like a lifelong passion is, you know, something that has stuck. What have you climbed? Well, what have been like your most favorite climbs, and what have been your most scary climbs?
It's hard to say a favorite climb. I've climbed all over the United States. I've climbed over in Europe. I've done mountain climbing in South America. I've been up in Alaska, but probably some of the most fun climbing has been, there's an area in California just near Lake Tahoe called Lover's Leap.
Uh-huh.
And it's just this beautiful granite with all these solid granite with nice cracks and these little dikes, which are just horizontal protrusions of harder granite that have weathered away, and they're anywhere from, you know, as wide as a dime to a foot wide.
Wow.
And they're all over the place. And that's one of the happiest places I've ever climbed. It's just fun climbing. Hard climbing, some very hard climbing, some moderate climbing, and that's really fun. Great climbing in Yosemite. I've just done some wonderful climbs there.
Yeah. And beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And also been probably the most scared I've been in Yosemite. One time I was climbing, doing a long climb with my friend and his girlfriend, and he went up, and then he said, "Dave, you better come up," because what we were doing is having his girlfriend go second. One of us would go first, his girlfriend would go second, one of us would go last. And so I get up there, and he's sort of in the middle of this blank face, and he has a really, really crappy, really, really crappy anchor.
Oh.
In the middle of this blank rock face.
Oh, no.
And so it's like, well, we can't really set up a rappel to go down because the anchor is so crappy.
Oh.
It's kind of barely holding his weight. And so the only place to go is we can see a crack up above us, but it's about 30 feet away. And how I have to go is I have to climb to his left and then climb above him up to the right. And as I'm going up this face, my shoes are just kind of sort of sliding.
Right.
Just sort of slowly sliding. And I'm just like, got to keep it together here, got to not fall, don't want to take all of us out.
Because you're all roped together.
We're all roped together.
You're all roped together.
Yeah, if I had fallen, I would have knocked my friend off his anchor.
Right.
Because he had a really lousy anchor. And we would have fallen, you know, 120 feet down to where his girlfriend was. And she had a good anchor, but it would have ripped out.
Right.
So.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Well, I take it that all worked out well because you're here.
I'm here, yeah.
Okay, I think I'm getting a little, like, flushed and freaked out. I'm just sitting in a chair. Told you, afraid of heights.
Well, and I, thinking back on it, it makes me even a little nervous.
Yeah.
It was like, yeah, there was sort of no margin for error.
Yeah, like quickly chewing gum and sticking it to the bottom of your shoes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's...
And that was in 1976.
Wow. Well, glad that worked out.
So am I.
Yeah.
And you did tell me a while ago about the story when you went up to Alaska and was climbing, and then you had to come down.
Yeah, I was climbing. I was attempting, I should say, Mount McKinley, or Denali, as it's called now.
Yeah.
I don't know why they named a peak in the middle of Alaska after a president who had never even set foot in Alaska. But
well, we could talk about that for a few hours.
Yeah. But its official name has since reverted to the Native American name, Denali. Anyway, I was up there and I got, I just got bad altitude sickness. Got up to about, I don't know, I got up to about 16,500. I was feeling lousy even further down and got up to about 16,500 and I was really feeling lousy and I had a bad headache and I was starting to have kind of trouble thinking and walking a little bit. And, you know, I knew I was getting, I had acute mountain sickness, but then it sort of goes into high altitude cerebral edema. And I think I was getting early high altitude cerebral edema.
So what is mountain sickness?
Acute mountain sickness is where, you know, generally people go up to people will go up to altitude and you don't get it until you're 8,000 feet or higher. Some people get it in Colorado when they go to ski resorts.
Right.
And usually it's just a generalized headache, feeling lousy, kind of some nausea, and kind of almost sort of nonspecific flu-like symptoms. And that's acute mountain sickness. And you can take medication, Diamox, which is one medication you can take for it, or you can come down. And the smart thing is to come down. Or just rest.
Yeah.
They see a fair amount of it in the winter in Colorado in the little emergency rooms in all these little towns.
Oh, wow. So it isn't that if you just, like, go there for a week and don't do anything, you can acclimate?
Yeah, you can acclimate. Yeah, it takes a few days.
Yeah.
And, you know, it varies. I've been climbing in South America, and I've been up to 21,000 feet and not had a problem, just, you know. But up on Denali at about 16.5, I really got sick.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I said, I'm going to come down.
And cerebral edema is swelling of the brain?
Yes.
Yeah, that's not good.
It's not good.
That is not good.
No, it's not good.
Yeah. And that's why I guess you don't climb alone, right?
Generally, yes.
It's a good idea to not.
Yeah, but, you know, a big mountain like that, really good climbers are going to climb alone.
Really?
I mean, yeah, there's a very famous mountaineer, Reinhold Messner.
Oh, right.
Who, you know, he did a bunch of climbs solo, big climbs. He climbed the north face of Everest alone.
Wow.
Solo back in the 80s when there weren't a million other parties on Everest. And he did it solo.
That's amazing.
Yeah. It was
crazy.
I met him. I went to a talk that he gave several years ago. And he said when he was on that climb, he was going up and he started out in the dark and he fell into a kind of a hidden crevasse.
Oh, man.
About 30 feet down. He climbed out of the crevasse and he kept going.
Right.
He said,
Yeah,
exactly. When he fell in the crevasse, he says, I'm going to go down. But then when he got out of the crevasse, he said, well, my brain just kind of said, I'm going to keep going.
Right. So it's Thursday. I've got nothing else to do.
That's right.
You know?
Yeah.
You've seen one crevasse, you've seen them all.
Yeah.
I.
So, but he's in a totally, totally different league than most other people.
That's his profession.
He made it his profession. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, he did.
Well, there's a lot of big mountains to climb.
There are.
Metaphorically and literally.
So to speak.
Yeah. Well, so this has been a lifelong passion for you then.
Oh, yeah.
To climb.
Yes.
So at what point, I mean, did you always kind of go, well, you know, when I slow down, I'm going to try for mountain rescue, or
Well, the interesting story. I went to college in town here.
You did?
Yeah, I went to college at University of Oregon.
That.
Yeah,
yeah.
And, but I was one of these students who really didn't know what the heck he wanted to do with his life. So I was in for 2 years. I was out for 2 years. I was in for a year and graduated, and then I was out for a year, and then I came back, and then eventually decided I was going to either get a PhD or an MD. And
did you flip a coin?
No, I worked in a lab.
Oh, wow.
And decided that lab work wasn't for me. I wanted to be with people. Two good things happened. One is I decided to go to medical school, and two is I met my future wife.
Oh.
She was a secretary there. I was a nerd in the dark shooting lasers at things.
She's like, I got to get me a piece of that.
Yeah, I don't know what she saw, but I was kind of a dirtbag climber.
Nice.
So when I quit college, I would work, save up my money, and then go live in Yosemite.
Oh, wow.
And just stay in Yosemite for like a month and just climb 5 or 6 days a week. And live out of my car and my tent. And,
right. For as long as the money lasted.
Yeah. And in the 70s, the Rangers kind of left us alone.
Yeah.
Because the climbing community there was part of search and rescue.
Oh, wow.
They were search and rescue.
Right.
And they were all dirtbag climbers.
Yeah.
So...
With
they
this
had,
one redeeming quality.
They had one head climbing ranger and one other climbing ranger back at that time. They might have had two, who were sort of in charge of, these...
Dirtbag climbers.
Dirtbag 70s dope smoking, heavy drinking climbers.
Drugs and alcohol and giant ropes and, mountains really, really high. It sounds like a great combination.
Yeah. Well, but these guys that were on the search and rescue team were really, really good climbers.
Yeah.
Wow. And, I got to meet, a lot of these guys back then. I was definitely a step below them in terms of abilities and bravery.
Yeah.
There's different levels, but... When I was in Eugene in college here, there was a business professor by the name of Stu Rich who was part of Eugene Mountain Rescue. And I would run into him at the columns, and I knew what I was doing, and he saw I could climb. And he tried a couple times to get me to come out for Eugene Mountain Rescue. But when I was in school, I worked really hard, and it was like I didn't have a lot of time to do a lot of other stuff. And in retrospect, I probably could have done it. The bar was very low to get into Eugene Mountain Rescue back then. It was just like, you want to join? Okay.
Yeah.
Show up.
Right. Here's a rope. Try not to die.
Yeah. Show up next. We have a meeting next Tuesday.
Yeah.
Show up at my house.
Wow.
Type of thing. So the seed was planted then, and then when it was coming time for retirement, Heather, my wife, was urging me to look into joining Search and Rescue and Eugene Mountain Rescue.
Wow.
So I did. I actually knew a couple people that were on the team, as it turned out. I didn't realize at the time when I knew them, but they were on the team, and... So they had me, I had to fill out an application and tell them what I've done. And I couldn't even begin to fit it all on.
Right.
It's
like, you need an extra piece of paper for that.
Yeah. And so they accepted me, but part of being in Eugene Mountain Rescue or Lane County Search and Rescue or any of the rescue teams here is you have to take something, a class called Search and Rescue 101, or they call it SAR 101. And what it is 135 hours of classroom and field time going over map and compass skills, GPS skills, radio skills, sort of generally how to take care of yourselves, what you need to carry in a rescue pack. I mean, they go over everything.
Yeah. Well, a lost rescue guy is probably not very helpful.
Yeah, lost rescue.
Yeah.
But, you know, the emphasis is that number one is take care of yourself.
Yeah.
If you're a rescue guy that needs to be rescued, then you're no good
right.
at being a rescue. So you have to know how to take care of yourself.
Yeah.
I literally had my last day of work on a Tuesday. I told him my last day is going to be this, you know, a Tuesday. It was like February 1st or something like that. And then 2 days later on Thursday night, I started Search and Rescue 101.
Wow.
So
wow.
I kind of jumped right into it.
Good timing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you said that they only open it up once a year?
Once a year, they have an informational class that if anybody wants to, they can go to. And it's put on by the Lane County Sheriff's Department. And it's just an informational class for several hours saying, this is what it is, this is what you have to do, this is what we expect. And then they offer this class once a year. And it starts generally at the beginning of February.
Oh, wow.
And goes for about 6 weeks and is 135 hours.
That's a lot.
It was a lot of time, yeah. But I had time. I was retired.
Right.
It was great.
Well, it's serious. So, I mean, you don't go out for search and rescue. Whatever team you decide to go on, if it's beyond just the regular search and rescue team, it's serious business. It's not to just do something because you don't have anything to do on Thursday.
Right.
You know?
Right. And you never know when you're going to get called out.
Because it's on call all the time, or?
Basically, yeah. But, you know, you can't go on every call out or every mission.
Right.
That they ask for people.
Oh, yeah.
So usually if they have a mission, they send you a text, there's an automated phone call and an email. And if you can make it on the mission, you text whichever deputy is in charge of the mission. There's two search and rescue deputies and then a couple of other deputies that kind of cover occasionally in Lane County, and you just text them and say, I'll meet you at, you know, the county shop area.
Wow. And how often does call out happen? Does it vary?
It really varies.
Yeah.
You know, during the snowstorm in February, which I actually was not here for, they were going out almost every day.
Really?
But what they were going out on was welfare checks.
Oh.
Because there were a lot of people who call up and said, you know, our grandfather, you know, lives out in the country, yeah. or somebody
right.
lives out in the ways. They don't have any way to get out. We're not sure how they're doing. They've lost power. So they need to be checked on.
Yeah.
And so Search and Rescue went out and did that.
Wow. How far afield and you get called out for both search and rescue and mountain rescue, right?
Correct.
Because they're not necessarily the same thing, the same calls, right?
The same people, no. Yeah.
So how many are on that?
There's a ground search and rescue team that gets called out for everything. And then there's a Eugene mountain rescue team where they need people who can go into the mountains. And they're the only ones that are going to be called for certain missions. There was some people that had to be rescued up on North Sister about a month ago.
Oh, wow.
And I went out on that call out.
Wow. And that's because does mountain rescue, is it because it needs like ropes and you have to be able to rappel down and climb up, or?
Yeah, you have
like,
to know how
what's
to,
the thing?
You have to know how to take care of yourself in the mountains, basically. You have to know how to use ropes, how to travel over glaciers and and all kinds of stuff. And it turned out I was on the backup team and hiked in a long ways.
Wow.
Starting at 11:30 at night.
Oh.
That day I had done a bunch of yard work, gone on a 25-mile bike ride. I try to work out 6 days a week to stay in some kind of condition. Had dinner, and then there was a call out. And so we left we got arranged and left Eugene at about about 9:30 at night. Got to the trailhead at 11:30 at night and hiked up towards the base of North Sister. And then,
and you were the backup team.
We were the backup team. There was a primary team that was actually got helicoptered onto.
Oh wow!
The saddle between North and Middle Sister, and they got to the people that needed rescuing.
Wow!
And then the National Guard came out the next morning with a Black Hawk helicopter and
ferried them out.
Ferried them all out. Not us.
Wow.
We had to turn around and hike 7 miles back out.
Enjoy the walk. Bye.
Yeah.
Wow. See, it's so glamorous. Glamorous.
It was so glamorous. And I was with a guy who was an animal. He was half my age. And we start from the trailhead at 11:30 at night. I've probably got a 40-pound pack. He's in fantastic shape. And, you know, he's one of these guys who's, you know, big and strong with 3% body fat. And I, after about the first mile, I had to ask him to slow down.
Yeah.
I said, I can't, I'm 65. I can't go this fast.
Right. Slow down, dude.
Slow down.
Right.
Yeah.
They're still going to be there. It'll be fine.
Yeah.
Wow.
So we got up there. We didn't actually get up to the people. We got up kind of to about where the glaciers start, and we just laid out until sunrise, and I didn't sleep. I froze.
Oh, good times.
Well, we didn't bring sleeping bags. We just laid out on the ground. And
oh, wow.
I got cold, and so I got up.
Because you're laying on a glacier, Dave.
Well, no, we were on dirt. We weren't quite on the glacier.
Wow.
But we stopped, and I was really tired the next day because we had to turn.
Weird.
On.
Yeah.
Had no sleep. And,
yeah.
But I knew how to take care of myself. I was getting cold lying there. So I said, well, this isn't going to work. So I got up and started walking around and started eating some more. And
Waited for light.
Waited for light. Yeah. Walked around with my headlamp for a while.
Well, this is a perfect segue to just say, if somebody gets stuck somewhere, they're just hiking and all of a sudden they're turned around or they're hurt or whatever, what should they do?
Well, first of all, it goes back to even before that.
Okay.
If you're going out, you should go with somebody if at all possible. If you're not going to go with somebody, let somebody know where you are and when you're going to be back.
Okay.
And then the second thing is to make sure you have the 10 essentials to take care of yourself. You know, food, water, clothing, way to make a fire, you know, a way to signal, map, compass, all the things that most people who get lost don't always carry.
Yeah.
But a cell phone is actually something that is a good thing to have because if you can get up to a ridge or get somewhere where you can get a signal, you can often call out. But it's very difficult in the Cascades here. There's a lot of places you can't get a cell phone signal at all. So the best thing to do is prepare.
Right.
Know where you're going, know when you're going to be back, and let somebody know. But if you do get lost or turned around, the best thing to do is just try to let somebody know where you are. If you can get a cell phone signal out. Sometimes you can text and you can't call.
Oh, yeah.
But the best thing to do is to just stay put. If you're on a trail, don't try going off trail. Just sit on the trail.
So those people that were up in the mountains, just because that was an easy example, how did you guys discover that they needed help?
Well, they climbed the North Sister, and one of them had fallen and had gotten a pretty bad cut on their shin. And he had wrapped it up, but realized he was not going to be able to hike out.
I see.
Because it was going to be bleeding too much.
Uh-huh. So they did get a cell signal out.
They had a cell signal. They were high enough up. They called 911. They realized early on, they were smart enough to realize that 911 and that they needed help. And actually, Life Flight brought them up there to the summit. Now, Life Flight is an air ambulance service, but they do some community service by occasionally assisting on this. It's pretty unusual because that's really not what they're about, is search and rescue. But they do occasionally help out. It's unusual. The Air National Guard, if there's a need, they're actually pretty good about coming out because they all need flight time. All these pilots and co-pilots and, you know, flight guys, they all need flight time. And if they don't have, if they have a specific mission to go out on, great. If they don't have a specific mission to go out on, I like to say they just like to make shit up. We're going to go pretend and go fly out here and do this. So it doesn't, nobody's charged for these rescues.
Nice. Well,
Yeah.
Wow. That's intense.
Yeah. Because it's all volunteer, you know. The only ones that are getting paid a salary are the deputies, the search and rescue guys. And the rest of us are all volunteers. And so, you know, our pay doubles every year.
Yeah, exactly.
Two times nothing is still nothing.
Nothing.
Yeah.
Well, so you just, you have to want to do it badly.
Yeah.
Because like you said, you know, you have to stay in shape for it. You have to keep up with your training. I imagine that they have regular trainings.
Yeah, we do. We do.
And you have a yearly evaluations if you want to be on a special team?
So there's, every year you have to take something called the pack test, which is carrying a pack. If you want to be on Eugene Mountain Rescue, you have to carry a 40 or 45 pound pack or 25% of your body weight.
Uh-huh.
They have a couple different routes you can do. You can do a flat route. You can go up and down Spencer Butte, or you can go up Mount Pisgah. So there's several routes. So that's sort of a fitness test you have to take every year. And then you have to have so many hours of volunteer time. And it's pretty minimal. It's like 30 hours a year to stay on the active list.
Wow.
But there's always training. There's always meetings going on. It's up to you to sort of try to, I mean, some of the, you have to be self-motivated.
Yeah.
To do a lot of this.
Well, and how far afield do you guys, is your call out?
All of Lane County. We do occasionally get called out to other counties. There was a search about 2 months ago for an elderly gentleman, and it was way out in Harney County.
And, wow.
And Harney County doesn't, they don't have a search and rescue team. I think there's search and rescue teams in Lynn. There's Corvallis Mountain Rescue here. Deschutes, Bend area has one. Portland, there's Portland Mountain Rescue. There's one in Portland, and then on the north side, it's the Crag Rats. They were the first sort of search and rescue team in Oregon.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, we do have a lot of mountains.
Yeah.
We do have quite a bit of wilderness, so.
There's a surprising amount of wilderness and a surprising number of areas you can get lost in.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm a big fan of the trail. The marked trail.
Yeah.
Wow. And it's a big commitment, too. I mean, with a year-long training and the 101 and
the training's only 6 weeks, but it's a lot of time. And you know, really, if you want to keep it up, it's a commitment.
Yeah.
And you know, there are people that did the training when I was there, and they were working full time.
Wow.
You know, they'd have to come from work, or they'd have to go to work if they work night shifts. I mean, I don't know how they did it.
Right.
It was a lot of time and energy.
Wow. So what is the medical portion?
We have a medical team, and if you have sort of any kind of medical license, you can be on the team if you want.
Oh, okay.
So there's a doctor, Dan Phillips. He heads up the medical team.
Wow.
There's a medical director who is an emergency room physician over at McKinsey Willamette, but he just kind of signs off. He's not active in the team. He sort of signs off on the protocols that we write up. There's a couple doctors on the team. There's several nurses on the team. There's a couple of paramedics and EMTs, and then people that just have something called a wilderness first responder, a woofer. That's sort of the short version.
Right.
And there are people that have had wilderness first responder classes, sort of vary, but in general, they're sort of, most of them are 5 days of all day first aid in a field type situation, a lot of classroom time and field time. There are shorter classes that happen over a weekend. So basically anybody can be on the medical team. And you get whatever your licensure will allow you to do, you can kind of do.
Wow.
So as a physician, I can do more than, say, an EMT can do in terms of taking care of people in the field.
So can you get called out for one and not the other? Just regular search and rescue and then the medical team?
No, or? No. It's always we're called out for either regular search and rescue, Eugene Mountain Rescue, and we just happen to be, it's generally somebody from the medical team is going to respond.
Okay.
In the call out. And so we have medical supplies, medical kit that we can take. We have a lot of different kits. And even the people that are on just regular search and rescue, even if they don't have a medical degree, they have had some medical training in search and rescue 101. It's, you know, it's basic first aid.
Sure.
And
stop the bleeding. Check the airway.
Stop the bleed. Yeah.
Stop See, I the can bleeding. Totally do that, except yeah. gross. Blood. Yeah. Blood. Yeah. Except I don't want to touch people. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. This is fascinating and seriously intense, and I think you're all a little bit nuts, but I appreciate what you're doing.
Well, I know I'm nuts.
Yeah. Well, I knew that. So if somebody wants to get in, wants to try out or check it out, what should they do?
I would say go to the Lane County website and or call somebody up at Lane County and the Sheriff's Department. And they have an informational couple-hour program. And it's sometime in the late fall or early winter. I think it's in November. And you go to this. I think it's – I didn't actually go to it.
You're just like, I'm all in, man.
But I had already been accepted. And I was already kind of a known quantity. And I knew kind of what I was getting into.
Right, they take one look at your resume and just go, just pass them.
Yeah, well, no, no. They said, no, you get to take Search and Rescue 101.
Yes,
so,
yeah.
But I was really glad I did it because it just went over all the basics, covered everything.
Yeah.
And so it was really good. So somebody could, if they are interested, and yet you have to be pretty committed to do it.
Yeah.
You have to want to do it. You can do it, and then they start the class, like I said, in February generally.
Wow.
It's classroom time and then field time. You have a couple weekends out
in the wilderness looking for people.
Well, pretending to look for people, but also doing things like making a shelter out of whatever you can find.
Nice.
Starting a fire with no matches.
Wow.
No lighter.
Yeah. I would suck at this.
Flint and steel.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, I'm not doing that.
Yeah, well, that's okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's, yeah.
I'm going to leave that to the people that like totally dig it.
Yeah. Well, you have your wheelhouse.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's not mine. No. I used to say that my idea of camping was staying in a hotel without room service.
Yes.
So I'm thinking outside a fire with no matches. I think I'm out,
yeah.
But it still makes it. It's totally interesting that this is something that is happening. And I'm completely grateful for people that want to do it just in case.
Just in case.
Just in case.
Just don't get lost.
Just don't. Just don't get lost.
I don't want to rescue you.
Why, thanks, Dave. And on that happy note, thanks so much for coming out and talking to us.
Well, thanks for having me.
And now for some housekeeping. HugeCast would like to thank its contributors, volunteers, and sponsors. A huge thanks goes out to Mark Davis at Eugene Tech for providing guidance and enthusiasm, to Trifoya for providing equipment, space, beverages, and the occasional pizza, and to That Supergirl for providing web hosting. Our producer is Kimberly Noel. Music and soundscapes conceived by Mike Jones. Audio editors include Mike Jones and Christopher Mitchell. Audio engineer is Christopher Mitchell. HugeCast hosts are the amazing Adam Wendt and the delightful JoJo Jensen. If you like what you hear, please give us a review. 5 stars would be nice. And who knows, we might even read your comments during the show. So thanks for listening, or sleeping through it. Either way, thanks.